You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring attorney, guest, and former felony prosecutor Eric Fadis.
There's a lot more in the Karen Reed case. Let's take a look at some more testimony here. Some chain of custody questions going on about, evidence that was there at the scene. Taillight pieces, cocktail glass. How did this all come about, and does it all coincide with what John O'Keefe was holding in his hand that night, that cocktail glass? And why did it take so long to get from point A to point B? Let's take a look at some of this testimony here with the forensic scientist Ashley Bell.
Consisted of several pieces of red apparent plastic and one piece of clear apparent plastic that measured an eighth of an inch by a sixteenth of an inch. Is that accurate?
Okay, so there were several pieces of red apparent plastic and then one piece of clear apparent plastic measuring approximately 1/8 of an inch by 1/16 of an inch, yes.
Okay, and I apologize for continually reminding you, but I'm just mindful that everybody needs to hear you. So to the best you can, if you can just keep your voice up, I'll try to do the same. So when those several pieces of apparent red plastic and one piece of apparent clear plastic came into your possession, those pieces were obviously not embedded in either shirt when you examined them, correct?
I don't know. I didn't examine the shirt.
Well, so to my question, the pieces that you saw were not embedded in a shirt when you examined them, correct?
Correct.
And again, that's because you never took possession of any shirt in this case, correct?
Correct.
The pieces were loose and they were not embedded in anything, correct?
The pieces were, well, I examined the debris from the shirt. I don't know what the person who packaged it did to collect that.
Okay. And so it goes without saying that you never saw those pieces on either the orange shirt or the gray long sleeve shirt, correct?
I did not.
And you obviously had no control over how the evidence was handled before it came into your possession, correct?
We have a chain of custody in the laboratory, but I did not follow the evidence as it went through the chain.
Okay, and we'll talk about the chain of custody in a minute. Before this evidence came into your possession, you did not witness who seized it, correct?
Correct.
You did not witness who handled it, correct?
Correct.
Before it came into your possession, you don't know who had access to that evidence, correct?
So all of our evidence is stored in locked facilities?
Right, but I guess let me modify that question. Before it came to your lab, you don't know who had access to that evidence, correct?
Correct.
You also don't know, before it came to your lab, whether the shirts in question were at all times kept separate from the red or clear plastic pieces of, pieces of plastic that were in the possession of certain members of the state police, correct?
Correct.
So the question there, what they're trying to point out is that the forensic scientist that looked at the shirt wasn't the one who picked the plastic out of it from the taillight. There was presented as, here's the plastic that was in the shirt, and it kind of goes along with it, but it wasn't in there at that moment in time. Again, kind of questioning, how did it get there? Or is there some sort of, deception going on amongst the officers of, here's the evidence and here's some extra evidence,
Yeah, it's hard to say if this was just sort of, a straightforward issue where pieces of evidence come in contact with multiple law enforcement folks over the duration of a case. That's normal. Mm-hmm. But it's not unprecedented for even when law enforcement thinks a person is factually guilty, but they have a weak case and they want to kind of bump it up a little bit. It wouldn't be unprecedented for additional evidence to kind of appear. And I think that's what defense is suggesting.
Well, and let me ask you this, because we're going to look at another clip here in a moment, and I want to talk about chain of custody, and when there's an incident like this, if you have evidence, how long it takes for that to be delivered where it needs to go for an investigation. How long can that take sometimes? Is that, if you're just investigating pretty quick, like, here you go, we have this, this is part of it, or does it take a while?
Totally. It depends on the case, but especially if there is like DNA testing or fingerprint testing, some sort of high level forensics, sometimes those technicians do not get the evidence for weeks or even months after the evidence has been collected. So there's a lot that can go wrong, or perhaps nothing went wrong.
Yeah.
But there is room for error.
Without a doubt. Here's some more testimony in the trial. Michael Proctor talking about or the chain of custody of Michael Proctor having delivered some of these materials 6 weeks after the incident. Let's listen and we'll talk on the other side.
It was delivered on March 14th, 2022.
Okay, so about 6 weeks or so after January 29th, is that accurate?
Sure.
Given that your lab received this evidence on March 14th of 2022, you can't testify to the chain of custody of the clothing or the pieces of plastic prior to March 14th of 2022, correct?
Correct.
And except for the taillight housing that was seized by Maureen Hartnett, except for that, your chain of custody at the lab for the two shirts plus the pieces of plastic in 7-18.18, that began on March 14th of 2022, correct?
Correct.
So between January 29th of 2022 and March 14th of 2022, you do not know what Michael Proctor did or didn't do with the orange t-shirt and gray long sleeve shirt, correct?
Objection.
I'll allow it.
I don't know.
Okay.
Trying to create some doubt there, but is it that, again, is this that bizarre that it took 6 weeks for it to get to the lab, or is that, you know, kind of understandable?
You know, I think that that amount of time is pretty common, especially for a homicide investigation. So that doesn't tip me off one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess to a jury, if you don't know that, you'd be like, oh, questionable. Kind of one of those things where it can look, if you don't have the correct prism to look through, or the education of understanding how those sort of things work, because it's not like everybody's world. Some other things that we did see in there that, again, are getting more difficult to explain. He had that glass. He had that cocktail glass. And they did find pieces of it on the ground. But then they also said that, hey, there's glass shards on the back of Karen Reed's vehicle. And surprise, the glass shards, according to forensic analysis, do not match the glass. His cocktail glass, anyway. So where are these shards from? Why is there glass shards on the back of her vehicle? Because I think everyone was thinking, oh, that's the cocktail glass.
Right. Yeah. And you know, where are both of these glass shards coming from? If one is the cocktail glass, the other has to be from something else. What did he have, two cocktail glasses? Did he have some other sort of mirror that he was holding on him? Like what is the prosecution's explanation for why there are two separate types of glass that are found at this crime scene? I haven't heard one yet.
That doesn't make a whole lot of sense at all. I mean, I don't... You're at a bar, then I don't know. I'm trying to come up with possible little plausible things, not excuses, but just plausible where things could end up on a vehicle that are pretty benign. But then when you mix them into this, you know, soup of insanity, you get what it is. I know you're parked at a bar. I mean, O'Keefe did take a glass out. I guess it's not insanely crazy to think that somebody else had a glass and threw it out of a vehicle. I don't know. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. As to why that is there.
Totally. And you're doing the prosecution's job for them. The prosecution should have before this saw all those things that might raise an eyebrow and determined what the explanation was for them so they could present it on redirect. Prosecution hasn't done a great job of that, in my opinion.
No, they haven't. We also saw a video of Karen Reed backing up her vehicle, and the defense made a pretty good point. They're like, watch the wheel of the other vehicle. And you can see it moves a bit. So she did make contact with that other vehicle. Could that have been when the taillight was broken? I guess that makes some sense. Could that, maybe that glass is from the other vehicle? I don't know. We haven't heard about what damage was done to this other vehicle or even looked at. Maybe that doesn't even exist. We don't have that information or that knowledge to do that. I suppose that could be possibly with the glass. I don't know. There's far too much here that doesn't add up. And at the end of the day, is it a murder? I don't know that we're ever going to know the answer to this, but
yeah, the jury's got a tough question in front of them. And I'm wondering if the prosecution kind of approached this with sort of a fisheye lens saying, hey, we think that this is the case. And they didn't account for these potential challenges to pieces of evidence.
Yeah, I don't think they did. I don't know. There's still much more to come. I guess stay tuned to this.
Sick of the ads?
We opt too.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.